Hello and welcome along. It's Andy, your host on this here podcast. Well, we made it. This is episode 2. Quite fantastic. I'm assuming that you've listened to episode 1. Hope you enjoyed it. I did immensely. It was nice to go and see Carisha again. On this episode, I'm talking to Amar from Make It Real. Interesting to get his perspective on bits and pieces video-wise, stuff that I'd got opinions on. He seemed to have completely different opinions on here and there. So that was really interesting to find out what makes him tick as well. And it was a nice little pull back behind the curtains, which is, you know, what I always aim to do and to give you, the listener. So again, if you're an industry professional yourself, you want to take part, please do drop me a line, andy@jibztv.com, jibztv.com. Look forward to hearing from you. Any positive only comments are always welcome via Facebook or Instagram. Facebook better, really. I spend more time there. And so here we go then. Episode 2 with Mr. Amar Sran and Make It Real. Here we go. So, welcome to the pod, Amar.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for being there. You had a media life before video, didn't you?
I did, a little bit, yeah.
Talk to me about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I think going back to school days, I was always like the... there's always that one guy in the school that's like the media guy, you know, the one that's always holding a camera and filming this and filming that.
Yep.
So it always just started off as, you know, like GCSE media studies, A-level media studies. Went and studied film and TV production at the University of Westminster. Which was a really well-known film school at the time, and still got quite a large reputation now.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, yeah, studied there, got my BA honours, worked with some amazing people, had some great experiences. Some people from the course are now working in Hollywood, which is amazing. And
so what went wrong? Why aren't you there?
Yeah, no, I'm working in the wedding industry, so yeah, I made it. So yeah, I mean, the dream was always kind of like Hollywood and making movies and things like that. But I feel like I had a bit of a passion for business as well.
Okay.
And it's a long journey to make it in the film industry.
Yeah.
You know, years of making cups of coffee and things like that. And the people that, you know, my friends that who have made it, did that slog for a long time. A lot of networking and things like that.
So you didn't fancy the slog?
In all honesty... No, I didn't. I always kind of pride myself on being one of the hardest working people I know, and that's always like my aim. I'm always going to try and outwork anyone else. But at that time, I was working in retail, and that was paying the wages and paying the bills and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I was independent. Smart. And then the kind of like, I started working on a well-known TV show for BritAsia TV.
Okay.
I fell into that.
Yeah.
And that was with Jazz Johal and H from Kudos. This is just as Kudos was starting up.
Okay.
And then fast forward a couple of years, that show had just blown up and had like a really big sort of following. It was really well known. That could open up a few doors because then people know what you've worked on, who you are, etc.
Yeah.
And then kind of like the brown card kind of got played a little bit. Then by default, it was like, oh, so you're brown and you know how to use a camera. You should do weddings.
Really?
Yeah. And it was never really a thing for me. I was just like, oh, I'm not really a big fan. I actually did my first wedding when I was 16 years old for my geography teacher at the time on handycams.
Yeah.
And I hated it. I went home that day. I got paid 50 quid. And I went home that day and I'm never doing another wedding video again. The stress, you know, tripods were falling over in the church and you name it. And I was just like, nah, not for me.
Yeah.
And here we are, what, probably 20 years later.
Wow.
With probably several hundred weddings under the belt, I reckon.
So did you edit that as well then? So you took up, okay. And if you looked at that today, how would you view it with your critical eye? How would you think it did?
I actually thought, even at the time, I thought we did a good job.
Okay.
You know, first wedding, no experience, zero budget, basic equipment.
Yeah.
And for a 16-year-old, I thought, not too shabby. But obviously, if you look at it now, it's probably like watching like Blair Witch Project or something.
Okay, so you did that first wedding when you were 16, and then there must have been a bit of a gap, I'm guessing, between then and getting into it professionally now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Make It Real's been going for about 12, 13 years or so. After university, I then went into teaching for a little bit. I was a media technician for the best part of about 4 or 5 years in a couple of different colleges.
Okay.
That then transitioned to actually teaching A-level media studies for about 6 months as a maternity cover for one of the staff.
Wow.
And then all whilst kind of dabbling on different projects, I started doing weddings. I was working with some well-known names, but kind of learning the ropes. So yeah. Rav Bogle, Swaran Media,
yeah.
kind of took me under his wing. And kind of taught me the ropes a little bit. I used to edit for him.
I was going to ask you about that, sort of, if anyone mentored your sort of early days and showed you what as well.
Yeah, so definitely Rav Bogle. So big shout out to him. Rajesh Hirani,
yeah.
Filmwork Studios. We used to shoot for each other, so I learned a lot from him. He's like a very knowledgeable guy from a tech perspective,
yeah.
And also kind of like from an industry and kind of creative perspective as well. So I learned a lot from him. But then you also kind of learn things of like what you see other people work and you see their work and you realise what you don't like and what you'd like to do differently.
Sure.
So you can actually mould something from working with lots of people, but not actually copying them. It's actually doing something opposite to what they do. And that's not a dig at anyone. That's just kind of like you find your own style.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how things kind of transform from there. So whilst doing that, I was working on the odd TV commercial or music videos, sometimes traveling the world. I worked on football coaching DVDs for the best part of 5 years with like Premier League managers. So it was just a real kind of mixed bag of like opportunities and experiences.
Yeah.
And you learn so much from all of those individual things that it kind of shapes you and how I run my business now. It's not just about being a wedding videographer. It's about being a reputable supplier, a professional, running a business well, understanding money, accounts, customer service, all of these things, which I feel like sometimes my honest opinion now is that the most talented people don't always run the most successful businesses.
No, because the skill set may not necessarily be there for them. It's just like they may be very creative people and yet don't know how to pay tax, for instance.
Or get videos back on time or whatever it may be. It's just kind of like you can be super talented, but so this industry, there's been so many examples of people that have killed it for a couple of years and then never to be heard from again.
Yeah.
And I think one of my proudest things is that we've been going kind of 10, 15 years strong.
Yeah.
And we haven't been sued yet. So, yeah, that's a bonus.
So you said there that you sort of, all those influences helped shape your individual style. So what would you say your individual style is? Can you sum that up?
Try. I think it ties in with the brand name a little bit. So Make It Real was always like I liked the element of realism. Yes, there's a lot of kind of like cinematic approach, but I feel like that sometimes it can, for myself, we like to have as much genuine and authentic emotion as possible.
Yeah.
Yes, you can make it look good, but it needs to be authentic in the first place.
Okay.
So yeah, that whole kind of like a bit more of like a voyeuristic photojournalism kind of approach to weddings where possible.
Mm.
And then glamming things up with a bit more kind of like a cinematic approach, and picking and choosing those times when to do that.
Yeah, that word cinematic is problematic, I think, because it's how do you sum up cinematic? I've seen stuff on Facebook where somebody will post a clip and cinematic highlights, and it's dross.
There's a lot of jargon that's thrown around in the industry as well at the moment. We have couples that will occasionally inquire with us and say, so do you do videography or cinematography?
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't know the difference.
Yeah.
I'm a film graduate and I'm probably the closest thing in the industry to being a cinematographer or a cinematography company, yet we still don't really define ourselves as that.
No.
filming live events is always going to be videography. Yes. It's just got cinematic approaches and lending cinematography, filmmaking techniques into the wedding industry.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden it's cinematography, which is quite incorrect.
Yeah.
It's always going to be videography.
Yeah.
But sometimes videographers don't know the difference, which is a shame. And don't get me wrong, there's some amazing companies that make wedding videos with a mass kind of cinematography approach.
Yeah.
And it's incredible to watch.
Yeah.
Their work. People like Story Motion.
Yeah.
But then there's also the flip side that there's, you know, it's videography essentially.
Yeah.
And I think we confuse couples. People think videography is just a 50-year-old uncle with a shoulder-mounted camera with a big light on it, and that's videography. And people using mirrorless or DSLR
that's the trouble.
On a gimbal is cinematography. It's not. It's just we're lending techniques from the film world.
Yeah. So someone. A couple approaching you, what do you think they expect from you?
Professionalism, a guarantee of results, especially with kind of like the years of experience that we've got. Mm. Forward thinking, but without being a trend-based company.
Okay.
Now, that might not make me the hottest thing at any point in any year, but I feel like it means that you always know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
If I follow a trend, next year that trend's over. In 10 years' time, they're thinking it's cringe, etc. So I always try to... my videos do evolve year on year.
Yeah.
Into something a little bit different.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you can go a little bit too trendy, you can shoot yourself in the foot.
And I suppose... You know, the hiring of freelancers, you know, people like myself with a camera crane. I promised myself I wouldn't make this an advert for me.
JibsTV.com.
But your approach then relies on finding freelancers that fit into your mould of filmmaking.
A little bit. But so also, like if you're building a house,
yeah,
the architect doesn't lay the bricks.
Good analogy.
So essentially you're employing labor. Now it's up to you as the architect or the director of a company or the cinematographer, if you want to call it that, on the day, is to tell them what to shoot and how to shoot it.
Yeah.
They're talented people with an eye for a shot, with the equipment that you need and an understanding of ceremonies and the day, etc.
Yeah.
That's the core of it. Then what they shoot needs to be directed, and you need to tell them how you want it.
Yeah.
Now, not everyone does that. People will just employ freelancers and just say, yeah, just do your thing. But what is their thing? Like, and that's where you have zero consistency in your work.
Yeah.
I'm really anal in the sense that... And don't make this a soundbite. I can see you looking at me. I'm really...
The trainer.
Anyone who's ever shot for me, and anyone who's ever shot for me will get a shot list and the moments that I want and what to look out for and how what to the point where I want cameras set up. What lenses I want used, what I want them to pick out, how I'm going to tell the story in the edit, so they understand rather than people just going rogue and just doing whatever they want on a wedding day. Yeah. Andy, you've probably shot in excess of 50 weddings with me probably over the years. Mm. I actually remember you saying to me once that you're one of the first people to give me a shot list of what you want and how you want it shot and how you want me to shoot a first dance or the first half of a party and how you want me to shoot differently for a second half of the party, for example.
Yeah.
Which I was bewildered at. Like, how has no one else ever given you any direction? There's 20 different ways to film a dance floor using a crane.
There is. But most people use exactly that phrase, just do your thing.
Yeah.
And then I guess my shots... probably don't make much of the edit. They're the occasional, or in my mind, they should be the occasional wow. But I have shot for people who I know very well are just going to use that my shots as the bed for everything else to go around, and I think that's probably wrong. In my head, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. I would never use a jib shots never ending. So you know, it's like the slider craze that we had a few years ago where it was just slider shot, slider shot, slider shot, slider shot.
Well, I don't think... I mean, using crane coverage as a bed for a party in all honesty, it is what we do some of the time.
Okay.
Now, and it's not a bad thing, I don't think. Now, when couples, so the way that we do our kind of pricing structure and to take on bookings is we never come with a big package. We always start small and let our clients build up to what is comfortable for them, for their wedding or their budget or their expectation level. Yes, 9 times out of 10, they'll want to book a crane for a wedding reception when they've got in excess of, say, 300 guests. But the way I explain it to them is the benefit of having a crane is not just providing a unique perspective and something that's going to be able to kind of shoot a party in a very unique way.
Yeah.
But actually, it takes the ball and chain off your other two cameramen that you've already booked in.
Yeah.
Because if they know that they've got a camera that's covering their back the whole time for the whole party,
okay,
that they've got a lot more freedom themselves.
Yeah.
To rather than be going back and forth checking between safe cams, and if, especially if you're doing an uninterrupted live edit. Which we do for parties. So as long as people are dancing and enjoying themselves, it's going to be in your wedding video, and it'll be a longer edit, but you know, you can always press forward, you can always watch it in parts or whatever it may be. So yeah, I think in that perspective, actually using it as a bed, but used in the right way, is completely fine. But yeah, you don't want to just watch a crane shot for half an hour.
No, because it make you feel sick.
especially your shots.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll have to count how many digs I can get in. Need a buzzer or a sound effect.
Yeah, absolutely. So, having got to this point in the Make It Real story, where do you see yourself going, like, 10 years' time? How do you see Make It Real being in 10 years' time? Still doing the same essential core business as you're doing now, or are you branching out away from weddings and doing more?
Yeah, I mean, it's never been wedding only. Okay. So it's always been a bespoke video production business with a special team wedding.
So you do corporate and...
Absolutely. So, I mean, at the moment, we're in-house with a prestigious ballet school, and we do a lot of work with them throughout the year. We work with local education authorities in doing case study videos with schools and different kind of government programs and incentives. You know, we've done stuff with the NHS, the Oxford University Press, where, you know, it all sounds very glam and we're working with like big brand businesses. But if you follow the breadcrumbs back, it's always been like small jobs that we've done for people.
Yeah.
And it's a recommendation upon recommendation. Then it gets to a brand name in the end, and it gets to a big business.
Yeah.
So I feel like gradually it will transition to that. Okay. I do feel like the wedding industry is a young man's game. Physically, but then also lifestyle choice. You know, I'm married with 2 kids. How many weekends do I want to spend away from my kids before they're old enough that they're not going to want to spend the weekends with me anyway?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is a question I raised with Carisha, and it's just like, where's that work-life balance?
Yeah.
And I mean, talk to me about the hours that you would probably do on the average wedding.
Yeah, so you take a typical wedding week. So we've just passed Easter weekend.
Yeah.
I said goodbye to my kids on Thursday morning. Actually, in this scenario, I said goodbye to them on Wednesday night. Thursday morning, before they even woke up, I had to be in Peterborough, 2 hours away, and spend a day there shooting pre-wedding events.
Okay.
By the time I got home, they were in bed, which was about midnight. I then had a Friday wedding, so I'm up and out the house by 6 a.m.
Yeah.
Still not had any human contact with my own family. Shoot a 16-hour day, back in bed once everyone else is asleep. Enough time to kind of recharge batteries, have about 5 hours kip, straight back out on Saturday, repeat, Sunday, repeat, Monday morning, you see your kids. Last time you saw them was Wednesday night.
Yeah.
So the hours can clock up. You can be working in excess of 100 hours across a wedding weekend sometimes, like, or a long weekend. It's insane. I'm a big fan of kind of analytics.
Okay.
And I logged my hours, I think it was last year or the calendar year before that, that post-COVID year where everyone was insanely busy.
Yeah.
And I worked out how many days I'm in the office, which is Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, guaranteed. Never take a day off unless it's like Christmas or a bank holiday.
Okay.
I worked out how many days I spent shooting on a weekend or an evening, tallied them up. I then deducted, say, 24 days out of the calendar year for annual leave, which you would get in any other professional job.
Yeah.
And I was owed, as an employee to the business, my company owed me nearly 62 days off.
Wow.
So you can see where the sort of hours that you're working is that I'm supposed to have 2 months off work now, paid leave. But it's not, in this industry, I'm not gunning it. It's the most amazing industry in the world.
Yeah.
But it's a hard slog.
Yeah. And do you think couples have any appreciation of that at all when they're thinking about booking, you know, teams to do A, B or C?
They do. But I don't think it needs to be expected or demanded because they pay us a lot of money.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, having an acknowledgement of the hard work you're doing is great, but we don't need to have sympathy for it.
Okay.
If you're not charging rightly for it and you're tired, boo-hoo, like, charge more.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah, fair enough.
If you don't feel like the work that you're putting in is worth what you're getting paid for it, then then don't do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, go cry to someone else.
Yeah.
Like, here's the world's smallest violin. but, it, you know, if you feel like you're getting paid appropriately for it and you're out there slogging away, then you just kind of suck it up and get on with it.
Yeah. What happens on those weddings where, I'm assuming that most couples will engage with the process, but I mean, I've certainly shot on weddings where either perhaps the bride or the groom aren't 100%, I don't like to use the word engaged twice, but there's no other word for it really, that maybe the groom isn't as comfortable on camera as the bride wants him to be. And so how do you, how can you manage that and still give the product that you want to give them at the end?
I think we always want to give something back that's a true reflection of our bride and grooms.
Okay.
They're not acting in a make it real film. We are filming their wedding day. So it's all about kind of like the true emotions. If they're, I'll walk into a bride's house this weekend and she'll be a really bubbly character, you know, loads of enthusiasm. Can't do anything serious. She wants everything to be laughy joke, and we'll roll with it and we'll go with that. And that becomes their product. You'll have someone else who's literally, they can't speak. They're in bits. They're anxious, terrified of getting married that day. And we'll film that emotion. Like, we won't make them do something different. So I think just having that rounded product or having a versatile approach certainly helps.
Do you think your own wedding helped inform that kind of knowledge? I mean, were you terrified of being in front of a camera or terrified of the actual wedding day? Or
I mean, there's a reason why I'm behind the camera, because I hate being in front of it. And same. I'm not going to listen to this podcast because I don't like the sound of my own voice. So hopefully, so you'll definitely know if this gets loads of hits. It's not because we're listening to it ourselves, that's for sure. I think definitely, I mean, I got married 11 years ago, and that was before I was doing weddings intensively.
Yeah.
And I think having that experience of knowing exactly how people are feeling or what they're going through and the chaos of a wedding day, especially Asian weddings, and all the different cooks in the kitchen that are getting involved, certainly helps in the approach of what we shoot, how we shoot it. And one of our main philosophies, I just got off a Zoom call before we did this podcast, is I say it to all my bride and grooms, is that your wedding day is more important than your wedding video.
Yeah.
You didn't put on a wedding day to make a wedding video. I'm here to work around you guys, work with you. I'm team bride, I'm team groom. And if everyone enjoys themselves and things generally go well and to some sort of schedule or on time, then the byproduct's going to be a nice wedding video because it was a true reflection of your day.
Yeah.
Now, we can, on the flip side, we can manipulate your day to make it all about the wedding video.
Yeah.
And the wedding video will look stunning, but it was at the expense of your...
enjoying yourself.
Yeah, your cooperation, your enthusiasm and your interest. And
yeah.
And those are all things that are non-existent.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
On a wedding day. But there's other people that do products like that.
Mm.
And it always looks stunning. And if the bride and groom are on board with it, that's great.
Yeah.
But I feel like the clientele I attract, they want to enjoy their wedding day more than anything else.
Yeah, fair dues to them as well. So every wedding then follows the same essential steps of A, B, C and D. How do you go about making those steps into something unique for the client?
I think personal pride, like professional pride, you always want to do something different. And in doing something different, that's how you kind of change styles and kind of like your work evolves.
Yeah.
Do we try to create something unique every time intentionally? No, because every wedding day is unique by default anyway.
Okay.
We could shoot the same venue, the same DJ, the same decor, the same temple, the same outfits, the same shots, everything identical from one wedding to the next, but the whole cast is different.
Okay.
You know, it's a different bride and it's a different groom. So I think just by default, all your wedding videos are going to be different. And just like the personality that people bring to the scene, to the action, would change every time. But like I said, going back to kind of professional pride, you do want to do something different.
Yeah.
And you always try and change things a little bit to keep things fresh, even if it's just for yourself.
Yeah.
But then also I remember a conversation I had with a photographer, and it was along the, we were doing a couple shoot, and I was like, oh, should we not do it? It was actually at Gravesend, Goodborough, and the stained glass window, it's like, it's a beautiful piece of stained glass. A lot of people do a couple shoot there.
Yeah.
This was going years back. This is probably about 8 years ago. And I said, oh, should we avoid that today? Because, you know, I was here last weekend and I did the same thing, etc. And the photographer said, did your bride and groom see examples of your work at this temple before booking you? And I said, yeah, of course. And they were like, well, they probably pictured themselves in your...
in that same scenario.
In that same scenario. So give them what they've paid for, but then also give them something else.
Okay.
So I always have that in the back of my head. So don't do different for different sake.
Yeah.
Do it as an addition to your trademark styles. Yeah. And again, I say it to all my couples, I'll be like, is there anything of my work that you've seen that you love, or anything that you don't particularly like and you want me to kind of steer away from? And they'll give me feedback. But so I'll kind of take that on board and always try and do something a little bit different in that process as well.
And I think occasionally you've done, when I've been working with you, I've seen the occasional sort of same day edit go up on the screen for the couple before the first dance or whatever. How does it feel when you stand back and everybody sits and watches that and gives a massive round of applause at the end? And you know, you'd tell me about that.
Yeah, that's probably the best, the most rewarding part of the job.
Yeah,
you get like late night messages or from bride and groom saying, oh, we watched our wedding video this weekend, it was amazing. And, you know, but to see people's reactions and to see people laugh, cheer, cry based on how you've filmed the most important day of their lives is literally like it's the best feeling that you can get. It's like winning a trophy. I mean, look, awards in this industry is a whole different topic and people but actually creating that emotion and having that immediate impact and that response is like you've just been awarded something. And I'll get dragged onto a dance floor and people will pick me up on their shoulders or they'll raise my arm like I've won a boxing match, and I'm embarrassed for it. All I want is just that round of applause while I'm hiding behind one of the DJ speakers, and that's enough for me. Is literally the best thing.
It's and sometimes those edits have come down to the, you know, 20 minutes before that it's shown on the screen, haven't they? Because we're including, or you're including, shots that that have literally just been taken, that maybe the decor of the hall. You know,
I remember we did one last year together, and the DJ started to get everyone to chant my name, which was a bit embarrassing. But it's nice.
Quietly, you're going to love it.
I put an image on the screen that says 10% off if you if you quote today's wedding.
How much inspiration, if any, do you take from other filmmakers?
Ironically, I don't actually watch anyone else's work unless it's kind of like it comes up on my timeline. And even then, it's like a quick glance for 10 seconds. And then I keep scrolling.
Is that a conscious effort to avoid other people's influences? Or
not particularly. I think, in a way, just because I'm in the industry, I don't need to consume the content myself.
Okay.
Yeah, it's nice to kind of like see what if there is a trend happening, despite me not really being into trends.
Trendy.
But also you have an interest, but it's not something I would purposely go out of my way to kind of consume.
Yeah.
Now, by default, you know, a lot of wedding suppliers follow each other, and you kind of come across each other's work.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's something that I'm guilty of not kind of paying attention to other people's work. I feel like I always learn more about from people's work for things that I don't want to do than I do want to do.
Okay.
Methods of work I'm very interested in, and how people work, not the results of their work.
Okay.
So rather than watching a particular wedding videographer's edits, I'd rather follow them around for a day and see how they shoot it in the first place.
Interesting.
I feel like I'd learn more from that approach than watching it. It's so, like a bit with a DJ, just if they saw someone DJing, stop and listen to them DJing for like 5-10 minutes.
Sure.
They might be like, oh, you know, you're so into it, it's the last thing you want to do probably at that point.
But right? when you found yourself a guest at a wedding and you're sitting in the goodwill at the back of the hall or wherever, do you find yourself watching cameramen walking around thinking?
I used to have a curious eye and see how they're working. But ironically now is that because I've missed so many weddings.
Yeah.
Family, friends, that when I'm at a wedding, I could not care less. I'm there to enjoy myself. I'm there to let my hair down, rather than worrying about how suppliers are working. Yeah, and having said that, you can be a bit of a snob. So, you know, I'll unintentionally, like, turn my nose up it's that food again. I prefer the food from last weekend's wedding where I was working. You know, it looked a lot better than this. But I think, and that's just,
Natural human reaction, maybe.
Yeah, we're spoiled for choice sometimes.
What's the job you're proudest of? Would it just be the last one that you produced, or is there one standout highlight somewhere in your career where you can sit back and maybe in your down moments? Carisha was saying in her down moment, she looks back to one particular event and that sort of G's her up again and gets her going. Do you have anything where you can that you would refer back to in order to motivate yourself, or no?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think my answer is twofold for that. I feel like some of the proudest work, some of my proudest work has come from weddings that haven't gone well. And you've done a good job in spite of everything going against you, and you've still managed to do the job.
Yeah.
You know, it's raining, so-and-so's late, this hasn't happened, people are are not cooperating with you, whatever the scenario may be.
Yeah.
And you just did your job.
Yeah.
And you went home and you thought, you know what, like, I did what I needed to do. Yeah. Because everyone can make, I feel like if you can't make a perfect wedding look amazing, then you know,
you have to back up and go home.
Yeah. It's how can you make a imperfect wedding look half decent. Look great. And then what motivates me, I remember we had a family friend who wanted me to film his son's wedding several years back, and I was politely declining, saying, no, I don't think I'm up to it. Like, it's a big wedding, it's going to be a particularly large booking, I don't want to let you down. You know, I feel like you should go with XYZ. Handed me, says, I want you to do it, because I know that you'll put more effort and enthusiasm into it than anyone else. And did well from it. I did it. And that was like a turning point wedding for me, where then kind of like I feel like my standing or reputation just went up maybe a notch. It exposed me to a different type of clientele. So I feel like the lesson to be learned from that is don't doubt yourself so much.
Yeah.
I feel like I've said this to a few people. I prefer to have a bad experience than no experience.
Yeah.
If you decline the experience, you don't have anything to learn from it. Sure. Whereas if you take the experience with two hands, it's either going to be good or bad, and you learn equally from both. So throw yourself in it deep end, and you know, you'll either sink, and get saved by a lifeguard, or you'll swim.
fair enough. So here we are, a year and a bit after COVID. Mm-hmm. So how did COVID throw a wrecking ball through your business, or how did you manage to get through the whole lockdown scenarios and covering, you know?
That was tough. As a business, kind of like financially, that was tough because literally no income for the best part of a year. We took whatever was on offer. We were very fortunate with some kind of business grants that were available at the time, but you know, sometimes it doesn't even touch the sides, and other times it kind of really helps you out of a pickle. Being really compassionate with our couples was the biggest thing.
Okay.
But you had to be sensitive to the kind of like the predicament that they're in, but also look out for your own interests as well. And that was the hardest thing, but I feel like we did really well doing that.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that we managed to navigate through COVID with all of our couples having a good experience with us.
Brilliant.
Now that might have been kind of like cancellations or whatnot, or rearrangements or postponements, but I feel like all the outcomes were worked for both parties.
Okay.
It might not have been entirely beneficial to both parties, but it worked. We made it work because it was a unique scenario. I think the wedding community all of a sudden became a hell of a lot closer. I know for a fact we were doing Zoom calls with multiple photographers and videographers, exchanging good practice, how we should look after our couples, how can we help each other, good advice, throwing up different scenarios, just so that we were well equipped to kind of help our couples, because it could have been the death of the industry, in all honesty. Yeah. It could have, you know, been quite apocalyptic. However, weddings have bounced back, and they might not have bounced back to the same numbers, and I think that's just because people have decided that they prefer smaller weddings to the best part. I mean, there's always going to be big weddings. But yeah, it could have been the death of the industry, and we could have gone back to doing leisure centre weddings all of a sudden, because all the big supplies would have just gone bust. I feel closer to a lot more suppliers now than I did before COVID. And the collaboration is much bigger, and there's a lot more respect for each other's work.
Right, so any unfulfilled ambitions that you feel, you know, stuff that might have passed you by that you really want to do, or...
Yeah, I would have loved to have done more destination weddings.
Okay.
I think by the time I feel like my quality of work was up to standard where people would want to fly me across the world to shoot their weddings, was a time where I had kids and it was the least of my interest to kind of like go abroad and work on weddings and etc. So I feel like that time might come back around before I pack it in. Not jealousy, but maybe envious of like people that get the opportunity to go abroad and shoot weddings. So I feel like that one passed me by a little bit. However, going back to the whole work-life balance, if you can earn the same money doing a wedding 10 minutes down the road, why, it looks all rock and roll for social media, but if you're earning the same money at the bottom of your road, you'd be a fool to kind of like not take that.
Yeah, that's true enough. It's very true. On the social media thing, how important do you think it is to maintain that social media presence, and how much do you actually put out there?
I probably feel like I put out an average amount of content compared to other people. I'm not particularly concerned about followers, likes, etc. It's nice, but I don't think it's a barometer of success or anything like that. You could always do more.
I need
to get my website revamped. There's loads of content that I want to put out, but you do get guilty of being in like a hamster wheel of just getting on with
production.
So at some point when things slow down a little bit, I'd love to kind of like not have a revamp, an online presence revamp, but like an update and glam things up a bit more. But you know, when you keep getting booked and something must be working. And if it's not broke, don't try and fix it.
Too much. Yeah. So my final kind of question to wrap this episode two, you're on episode two. My final question is, if I could like wave a magic wand and give you the tools and the equipment and the knowledge to do any job within the wedding industry, what would you do?
DJ.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think the reward element is twofold. Being able to perform in front of... And actually, I used to DJ once upon a time, but I kind of packed that in quite
a bit. I'll have to ask Jess about this, right?
Okay. He's heard me play, I think. The reward element of people just enjoying your job, and that reaction, going back to kind of like the reaction that you get from same day edits.
Sure.
They get that every 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, every time they drop a song or a mix or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think financially, the reward element is definitely there, especially if you're going to put in the hard graft and you've got and you're going to be talented at it.
Yeah.
I feel like that is a great job to do.
You're a frustrated rock star, really, then.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's what it is. Yeah. So.
Well, Mr. Amar, thank you for taking part, and it's been an absolute pleasure. And yeah, you must listen back to this.
I'll try. Can you put a filter on my voice? Don't sound too grumpy.
Yours and mine both. Thanks a lot, man.
Cheers, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Well, there we go. The end of episode. We got through two episodes, and you're still here. You're mad. But thank you. You know, if sticking with it and supporting, it's appreciated. And I hope you're enjoying what you're hearing. And so, if you're an industry professional yourself and you'd like to be involved, just drop me a line, andy@jibztv.com, jibztv.com. Be more than happy to bring you on board and get a little peek behind the curtains with his good selves. So there we go. Next episode, Mr. Gurvi Johal, multi-award-winning photographer. Yes, yes, yes. Really looking forward to letting you hear that. It was a very interesting chat. And that'll be up hopefully next week for you. Okay. Thank you for sticking with it. Much appreciated. And we'll see you soon. Cheers now. Bye-bye.